Hello and welcome to Take the Black, a podcast where we discuss all things fantasy and science fiction, and most especially Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire, House of the Dragon, and right now, importantly, obviously, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. My name is Daniel Roman. I'm the editor of winteriscoming.net, and I'm psyched to be joined by co-host Mark Nettles. Mark, how you doing?
I am doing good. I got to see A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms episode 2. I got to see Sir Arlen of Penny Tree or Sir Arlen the Tree, whatever you want to call him. I'm happy to be here to discuss all of it.
Yeah, yeah. This show showed me more of Sir Arlen than I ever thought I would see in this episode.
We saw every side of him, more sides than I can count on one hand. More sides.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to talk about that, as well as a bunch of other stuff. And yeah, episode 2 is out now on HBO, on HBO Max. It's called Hard Salt Beef, after, you know, Dunk's meal of choice that he and Sir Arlen used to eat on the road. And it's a cool episode. It's got some warm fuzzies. It's got some new characters. It's got some heart-wrenching developments for Dunk's animal friends. And yeah, we're going to get into all that and more. And this is the second of our Knight of the Seven Kingdoms after show breakdown episodes, where me and Mark, who you might recognize from House of Nettles, TikTok, YouTube, check those out if you haven't. We're going to go through all of the nitty gritty for each episode. We're not going to be spoiling the novella at large. So if you haven't read it, you know, watch without fear. We may, you know, cryptically hinted things from time to time, but we're not going to go spoiling things, unlike the HBO Weeks Ahead trailer. Mark, did you see that trailer? Did you see the drama around this trailer?
No. Was that the original trailer? Or is this I didn't see this one.
Yeah, so the trailer that dropped before we get into the episode, we got to talk about this too, just a little bit. The trailer that dropped after the first episode of the season, that was like, here's what to expect in Knight of the Seven Kingdoms season 1, spoiled like beat for beat like 3/4 of the season. People were like calling HBO out on social media because it was like the major things that happen in episode 3 and 4 are spoiled in this trailer. And it's like, all right, HBO, you do you, I guess.
Like that's the show. Like let the people who never read the novella, give them a chance to kind of see what's going on, get back into the world. There's a lot of people trying to get back comfortable with this different tonal feeling Iron Throne show. They're like, okay, don't give it away.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So yeah, there's some things they've been good about not giving away, but the plot and what will get Dunk in trouble in this, not so much. You can find that pretty easily if you go online now. But that's not this episode. This episode, we've got nothing crazy to spoil. So let's get into it. So Hard Salt Beef. Mark, where would you like to begin with this episode? Because there's a whole bunch of stuff we need to talk about.
You know what? I'd say we can just start right at the beginning, seeing Sir Arlen of Penny Tree in all his glory.
Yeah.
But I think it was good counter to how we saw him in the first episode. Of course, we saw him beating a younger Dunk, giving him a couple of clouts in the ear. And this episode, we got to see why Dunk has so much reverence for him, why he believes in the Penny Tree himself. Seeing there, besides him being greater than other men in one area, just being able to see their relationship together. Was Arlen the greatest warrior? Was he the greatest knight on a mount? No, but you can tell he really cared for Dunk in those moments they shared together, and the moments we saw before his death.
Yeah, totally. I thought that was a really nice way to open this episode. It starts with kind of Dunk giving this monologue about who Sir Arlen was, why he was a good knight. You know, it's not like he had a bunch of renown or he was rich or any of these things, but like he just tried to make the world a little better for the people he came into contact with. And like, you know, we're so used to knights in Westeros who are like embroiled in the politics that it's nice to see like this hedge knight, this old man who like he just tried to, you know, do good wherever he was. And the show kind of sneakily sets that up, where what we're actually seeing is Dunk pitching this to a bunch of great houses, like it kind of subtly mentions a bunch of house names at the end, catching us up with Leo Longthorn Tyrell there at the very end, where he's trying to get them to remember Sir Arlen, and no one does. But we certainly will after watching the episode.
All of them. And I think that was a good drop, showing him with Lord Leo Tyrell, showing how Dunk is still naive, thinking like, I'm a knight, I'm honorable, not all knights are honorable. So when I say this, they should know I'm not lying, I'm being honest, and it should be easy and somebody should come vouch for me. But obviously that's not the that's not the response he got. He's starting to learn like, hey, me just being honest isn't enough. Like that, me being a knight, that's not the only thing that makes everyone believe in me.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And, you know, it's, I feel like this show, you know, that was there in the novella, obviously, but I think the show is almost dialing into it a little bit better, or a little bit more, where like, because, you know, we never saw Sir Arlen alive in the book. Like, Dunk thinks about him at times, but like the show is really playing off of this idea of like, what does it mean to be a knight in Westeros? I think in a way that's almost a little more sophisticated than the novella did. And yeah, all this stuff with Sir Arlen, you know, I gotta say, the nude shot of Sir Arlen, it's kind of reminiscent of the poop scene last episode, where it's like, you know, someone in the writer's room chuckled to themselves when they had this idea to have Sir Arlen just randomly be very well endowed, and he's just going to be there. You're just going to, it's like the first thing you see of the whole episode. It's like a Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. We're back. We're okay with potty humor here. You know, we're just trying to have a good time, and no one take ourselves too seriously.
No. They did it in the first episode. They did it in this one. Hey, we are setting a tone.
That's true.
A new tone. They nailed that part of it.
Yeah, totally. So Arlen, you know, we do see a fair bit of him. And like you said, I like that we get to see, you know, a slightly more tender side, or like, you know, him saying Dunk's name instead of just smacking him in the head a bunch. Like, we see that he did actually care for him. You know, they did spend time on the road. And part of that montage was right before Ashford Meadow, because Sir Arlen is, of course, he's singing about going to Ashford Meadow in one of the scenes. But that is, you know, it feels like a little more of an introduction to Arlen, but he is far from the only character we get introductions to in this episode, because shortly after that, where, you know, Dunk is shot down by Leo Tyrell, Egg kind of gives him some grief about debasing himself in front of all these great knights, which is a lot of fun. Then we get to see all the people of House Targaryen show up, and that is a big, you know, a big drop, because they're, you know, we're looking at Baelor Targaryen, the heir to the Iron Throne, his brother Maekar Targaryen, and Arion, Maekar's son, who might not be the best of the lot. So what were your impressions of the Targaryens? We got to see a few of them. We got to spend time with them this episode.
I feel like we're officially back in Westeros when we get to see a Targaryen. It's like, okay, this makes sense. We got dragon people again. No dragons, but we got the people.
Yeah, totally.
I think that was an excellent scene showing the dynamics between the two brothers. When we see Baelor and Maekar, they're coming up, and one of Lord Ashford's men's making his announcements, saying Prince Baelor, giving him all the accolades, Hand of the King, next in line for the Iron Throne, Prince of Dragonstone. He's hyping him up. I feel like it's Muhammad Ali out here hyping himself up before a fight.
Yeah.
And then it goes to Maekar, and he's like, and Prince Maekar, yay!
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, the look on his face, he looked like he was used to it, but he was over it. And I can only imagine how other siblings, like, I'm an only child, so I don't know how it feels, but if there is a younger sibling out there who's used to their older sibling getting all the accolades, everyone's fawning over them, that scene was for you.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, House Targaryen, you get so many juicy family dynamics with the Targaryens over the course of House of the Dragon and this show and Game of Thrones. You know, Maekar is, if I recall right, he's the youngest son of King Daeron. So we have Prince Baelor, the oldest. We have Prince Maekar, the youngest. I'm pretty sure there's another son or two in there, but it's
Rhaegal and I think Aerys.
Yes, they mention them very, very briefly in this episode when they get into the fact when Dunk is eavesdropping on these two, talking about how Makar's two sons are missing. Daron and Aegon are gone. They don't know where they are. They're looking for them. But yeah, I thought that was a fun dynamic too, where Prince Baelor gets this big epic introduction and then it's literally, and his brother, Makar.
Oh yeah, he's here. Yeah,
yeah, totally. I really like Makar in this episode. He's kind of, he's a little bit of a no-nonsense character in the book too, but he cracked me up more. I don't know if it's the deliveries or the timing of the lines, but like, he's really just like, in that scene where Duncan, you know, he goes in and he kind of makes his case to them. Makar's just like, what the hell is happening? Who is this guy? Why is he here? Like, why am I listening to this? Yeah, so I really like these Targaryens. I love that we're getting, you know, to see a different side of the family and some dark hair on a Targaryen. Cool touch.
Yeah, we're getting to see a lot of different looking Targaryens. We've got Baelor in his dark hair. I even wish it was a little darker because I know he's supposed to be from Dorne. It could have went a little darker on it, but you know what? We got what we got, and I'm not mad at it.
yeah.
So that was good. And then we got the young Prince Arion. Yeah. Am I pronouncing it right? Arion.
I think Arion. Yeah, I'd have to go back and rewatch the episode, but I always said it Arion.
You know what? George R. Martin told us pronounce it however you want, and I always there took that to heart.
There you go. Yeah, so what'd you think of him?
I think for what we're going to get of that character, this is a great little sneak peek to all of Prince Brightflame meanness as we get. It was great to see just how he... It wasn't great to see, but how he just belittled Dunk. He's like, hey, man, you gonna get my horse? Dunk's like, I'm not actually the guy that gets horses. And he's like, oh. And then Dunk has to explain who he is. Like, I'm actually a knight, if you couldn't tell. And like, of course, Dunk, nobody can tell that.
Yeah. Yeah, Arion just immediately like, man, knighthood's fallen on hard times, I guess.
Yeah.
He's pretty terrible. You know, he's a Targaryen in the vein of Viserys Targaryen from Game of Thrones, where he's spoiled, he has a high opinion of himself, he's also wildly insecure because, you know, he is very far down the line of succession because he's Makar's second son, I believe.
Yeah,
so Makar's second son, and Makar is the fourth son of the king. So, you know, Arion is nowhere near the Iron Throne in the line of succession. There are a whole bunch of people ahead of him. And it's just kind of made the situation where he is, you know, he's still a Targaryen prince. He's still got a very lofty opinion of himself and his house and a very low opinion of other people when he wants to talk down to them. But like in his own family, he has very little power. So, yeah, we see that come out pretty immediately here where he's just trash talking Dunk just out of the gate. And yeah, I imagine don't expect nicer things from Arion. The rest of the story.
That probably was nice nicest.
Yeah, right. Was this his nicest scene? Maybe.
Yeah, this is what gives us. That's on a good day.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill at its lowest price ever and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first and only GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Based on advertised cash price for 30-day supply of medication only. Membership required. Fee not included. And billed separately. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Hey, that, and what you said made me think, do you think, since he is at Ashford Middle, being the second son of a fourth son, does he get to act up a little more since he's here? Like, of course, if he's in King's Landing, he's going to act like a prince. But when he's out here amongst, you know, a smaller castle, probably more small folk able to approach him, he can really be all of the Aryan Targaryen we know him to be, and that we will eventually see. But he can put his shoulders up a little bit more. Like, I am a prince compared to all these people.
Yeah, totally. You know, that's a good point. I feel like, yeah, probably. Why wouldn't we? Because, you know, all the people who rank higher than him, most of them aren't here. And his, you know, his older brother Darren's missing. And the king, who is the person he'd really be afraid of upsetting, probably not around. So instead, he has all these people he can boss around who are, you know, lower born than him, who should be listening to him. So, yeah, I imagine you're right. I think this is, you know, I don't remember. I'm sure it was just like this in the book, but like the image of the three Targaryens arriving being Baelor, Maekar, and Arryon. And there are other ones like Baelor's son Valar is there too, but yeah. He's in the lists like out of the gate. We see a joust at the end of the episode and Valar is jousting. So it's those, the other three, Baelor, Maekar, and Arryon, who are the ones like sitting in the grandstands, like representing House Targaryen from on high. So yeah, I think you're probably right about that. I think he's got less to fear, less people who can put him in his place. It's really just his dad and Baelor, and that's it. So yeah, I imagine we'll see him act out a little bit more as the story goes on. So Arryon, he's played by Finn Bennett from True Detective Night Country. How do you feel about the casting? You like this actor for him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, great. Hey, he's a smug prince. He's got it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. So I haven't seen Night Country, but from everything I've heard about it, his character in that was like, you know, a rookie cop or younger cop who's like the idealistic one. So this is a pretty big turn for him to now be playing like a loathsome villain. He's the next, you know, Game of Thrones loves its love to hate villains. And like, that's him. That's Arryon Targaryen. So we'll be seeing more of him.
I'm about to say, can't we just hate him? We have to do the love part. Just
yeah, I guess we don't really. There are only six episodes here. Do we have to spend any time loving this guy? Probably not. I did love that Dunk does still end up taking care of his horse. Yes. You know, the horse kicks a guy and then Dunk's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, I'm not a servant, but like, I like a good horse. And he takes the horse aside and cares for it and stuff.
Yeah. And then we got to be introduced to some Kingsguard members. I know Donald of Duskendale. I can't remember the other one's name.
Sir Roland Crakehall is the other one.
Exactly. So Dunk, after he puts the horse away, he rolls up and he sees those two, get an introduction. I know Sir Crakehall, he saw Dunk, he's like, whoa, you are really tall, and gives a little side comment about him. Probably saw he was dressed as well and like, oh, you're a knight? Oh, okay.
Yeah. I like the little bit of relating with Sir Donald of Duskendale, who you know, he's not a Darklyn. House Darklyn is the house that rules Duskendale. I think we saw them a little bit in House of the Dragon. I'm pretty sure we see Criston Cole sack Duskendale in the fourth episode of House of the Dragon when he executes a dude. That's a Darklyn. But this dude, not a Darklyn. He was just a humble crabber. You know, and then later in the episode, Egg's like, his dad owns half the fleet. Love
he's
it.
Like, yeah, he's like surprised, like, oh, what are you, how do you even know that? He's like, I just know it. Don't worry about it.
I love fishing.
Yeah, I love fishing. Yeah, I think that was great. It gave, I like how they gave Dunk a shot. Like, yes, a humble knight can really rise up through the ranks, really prove himself, and you can be on the King's Guard too. And it's like, oh no, he comes from a rich aristocratic family too. They don't have a name, but they don't have nothing as well.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And, you know, there are a lot of, for book readers, there are some good little breadcrumbs here and hints and things that will add to the rewatch value, I think, of the show. And, you know, Egg's vast knowledge of many subjects is probably one of those things that I think will play really well on the rewatch. But, yeah, so we did see some Kingsguard people. And then Dunk goes in and I think this is probably my favorite scene of the episode, is when Dunk follows some servants into the castle, into Lord Ashford's keep, and he's kind of eavesdropping on Baelor and Makar having this discussion about Makar's missing sons. Then Ashford's daughter comes out and is just like, hey, you're big and stupid, and then like leaves. Like, everyone's just crapping on Dunk this episode. And then he gets caught out because Makar notices this giant dude trying to stand in off to the side of the doorway. He's not very inconspicuous.
Yeah. Behind a little pillar. Like,
you behind can't a little pillar. The comedy is strong. But then we get this really, I think, great scene where Dunk appeals to Baelor and he's like, do you remember Sir Arlen of Pennytree? He told me about you. What were your thoughts on that scene? Because I really like that one.
Ripped straight from the book.
Yeah.
Seeing how Baelor just remembered him. He was able to pull up like, oh yeah, I remember going against the joust with him at the Attorney in Storm's Inn. Heard about Sir Arlen. I think he said he beat somebody in the melee, unhorsed somebody in the melee, and unhorsed the Grey Lion of Casterly Rock.
Yeah.
The current Lord of Casterly Rock.
Yep.
And he's like, do you remember the name? And Dunk's like, I do remember the name.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I like that there was like, you know, and again, this is all straight from the book, but like that little quiz of, you know, if what you're saying is true, like, you probably remember this. And you know, Baelor's there showing off how good his memory is, because that's this whole thing. Dunk is just like, who remembers Arlen of Pennytree?
The Prince of Dragonstone.
And I really like Bertie Carvel as Baelor. He has kind of like a very like classic Hollywood type of feel, and like the way he's presenting these lines and stuff. He is a really, you know, watching him, it's like you could see why he's the heir to the Iron Throne and people like him. Like, he's, you know, far removed from like the bickering of House of the Dragon. Like, Baelor Targaryen is generally fairly well loved in you know, the lore of Westeros, like as well loved as Targaryens can be at this point in history, you know, because they are on the decline. But like, he's a valiant one and an honorable one, and like this lowly hedge knight just wants a shot to compete, and Baelor's like, why not let him compete? You know, I believe him. Who's going to come in faking saying they knew Arlen of Pennytree? Let this guy in.
Yes, nobody in the world would fake that. And for Dunk to say, like, hey, Sir Arlen went against you. He had seven lands. You guys broke seven lances in that tourney and Storm's Inn. And Baelor had to turn around like, well, it was four. It goes, I know that the tale grows more in the telling, but it was only four lances. Still good. Sir Arlen, 15 years ago, was still, you know, an older man then.
Yeah.
And to break four lances against the, you know, the crown prince. Every knight has his day.
Yeah, totally. Not bad. That's probably one of his, you know, his big achievements in the joust was breaking the four lances against Baelor. And I love, so they used Makar a lot as like, again, for the comedy beats. This show is doing a really good job of emphasizing the comedy in big and small ways. So obviously you have the more notable ways, like the poop scene, like Sir Arlen, like all these things. And then you have just like scenes like that one where it's ripped straight from the book, but they're going to give Makar more like reaction shots. So like, you know, Dunk says it was seven lances, and then Makar like chuckles to himself, and you know, he's getting a kick out of anyone second guessing Baylor, especially this lowly hedge knight. And I really like that the show is doing that. I think it's working really well.
Yes. They did a great job with that. That scene with the comedy bit, and even showing Plummer in the background looking like,
yes,
oh, all right. Like, oh my gosh, what are you doing here? To all right, you're competing attorney. Oh, yep. In my head, Plummer gave him like a thumbs up, like, good job.
Yeah, totally. He gave him the nod. It's like, you can go, like, get out of here now. You did the thing. So that was all. I love that scene. I think they did a really great job with it. It's kind of like the linchpin on which the episode turns, because before that, everything for Dunk was, who can I find to vouch for me? That was his big hurdle to getting into the tournament. And now that's past him. He can compete. So long as he, you know, has actual armor to wear and a shield, the one stipulation that Baylor gives him is you can't use that shield you have. It's got Sir Arlen's crest on it, and you're not actually his son. Go make up your own sigil. Mm-hmm. And that brings us.
Yeah, I'm going to say, easy said than done. Who doesn't have a bunch of money to go spend on a whole bunch of new equipment?
Right? Yeah.
Especially a hedge knight.
Yeah, totally. So this gives us kind of a good pair of scenes for Dunk. The first is with Tansel, who he goes and watches another puppet show with, and eventually asks her to paint his shield. Tansel is, you know, it's Dunk's romantic entry. He's smitten. How'd you feel about, you know, the scenes we got with them and with Egg there in the mix kind of being like, oh my God, you're embarrassing us.
I think that was great having Egg there to give his facial expressions. Seeing Dunk fumble over his words while he's trying to ask her, can you paint my shield? And she's telling the story about how he called himself Sir Duncan the Tall. The boys used to call her Tansel Too Tall. He's like, oh, you're not too tall for it.
Yeah.
He's like, for what? Like, oh.
that's another one of those inner monologue bits from the book, if I remember right, that they made dialogue and like, it's great. They're using judgment really well on where to do that, because that's cute. And then Egg's just like, what were you gonna say?
I am not gonna say it aloud. I'm gonna keep that one in my head.
yes. So yeah, I really like that scene, and I liked, you know, falling back on the all knights are fools, or all men are fools, all men are knights, or whatever the line is.
Yes. Where women are concerned,
which, yeah, that was where Dunk was, where he was concerned with Tansel. But they do give her, you know, the description of the shield that he wants. And then he ends up kind of venting, oh, did I do a bad job to Egg? Like, that was a fun scene too. And like, the back and forth where Egg is like, what does he say? People think he's puny or something. And then Dunk is like, people think I'm stupid. And he's expecting like some reassurance. And like, that's the end of the story. And then Egg is like, well, what do you say? He's like, that's rude of you to bring it up.
Like, you want me to help you grow? Like, he's like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Their chemistry is still just excellent, I think. Dexter Saul Ansel, like, that kid, he can really act. He's so good.
Yeah, he's holding his own, just showing them banter back and forth. It's like, all right, we are, it's only episode two, but they are a team for it to only be their second day together. Like, we are all in.
Yeah, totally. There's a fun little scene there with Lionel Baratheon where they play tug of war. You have any thoughts on this? I feel like that one's it's pretty much what's on the tin a little bit.
I think the most important part of that scene is when he goes up to Dunk and asks him, will you heed my call? And then he's like, heck yeah. Like, I'm going with you, buddy. Let's win tug of war.
Yeah, they're buddies. Lionel's like, I like this guy. He came to my tent. I thought he wanted to kill me and he just wanted tarts. Like, yeah, that was fun. And Lionel, of course, like the showboat, leaving the rope and then going and drinking and then coming back and giving Dunk a pat on the butt and then yanking the people over. Like,
That's why you get the big hedge knight.
Yeah. I feel like I saw someone say this online that like Lionel is giving off the same sort of charisma vibes as like Oberyn Martell. And like, we haven't had that in a throne show in a while. And I'm like, you know what? I can kind of see that.
I can see it a little bit. Yeah, yeah. So far for what we got. And we got to see Lionel do a little jousting at the end when he was doing the 7v7. That was great to see.
Yeah, that was really fun. So before we get into the joust, we got to shout out another new character who I know you are excited. You mentioned this in our pre-season episode. You were excited about Steely Pate. What do you think getting to see Steely Pate?
The legendary blacksmith has arrived on the scene. it was great seeing him, just seeing his dynamic with Dunk on how they were, Dunk's trying to get some new armor. Of course, he can't wear Sir Arlen's armor. He was a way smaller man than him. Was trying to trade it, realized he doesn't have enough money. So we see him at the end of the episode, eventually having to sell his horse to have the money to pay for it. But just seeing, like, he told Dunk, hey, this is the cost. The cost is the cost. And while he's walking away, another person again looks at him. It's like, let me help out the kid. I'll save it. Give me some money. I'll save it for you. Go out, try to get something. We'll see what we can do.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's kind of a theme of this story is Dunk is just this earnest, nice guy in this kingdom where everybody has a streak of awfulness, or nobles do at least, often have a streak of awfulness. And like, people just gravitate toward that. Like, this guy's just trying to do the right thing. And like, he wants to compete and be a champion. And like, you know, he said it a few times, like, I mean to be a champion here. And like, Steely Pate's like, oh, and all these other people are just here to cheer you on. You know, like, that's what everybody's here for, Dunk. But like, you know, he's so earnest about it that it can't help but like reel in people like Steely Pate and like you know, the camp followers in the last episode, and make them be like, all right, like, and Plumber too, you know, Plumber was like, go find someone to vouch for you. Like, there's this idea that like Dunk is just so honest with people that like they just end up kind of wanting to help them. So yeah, I liked Steely Pate a lot. I think there was a really good casting there, and he, you know, he's easy to watch on screen, and he's kind of like exactly what I imagined almost from the book.
Yeah, yeah. You got a burly guy, bunch of armor. As long as they can act, can't go wrong. And I don't think they went wrong in the casting. I think it perfectly played up that scene. You know what? It made me more interested in seeing how the armor is going to look. If he is going to get the armor, like what's going to happen with that?
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. I'm excited to see what comes out of that, especially because this does lead into the saddest scene of the episode, because Dunk does need some money to get armor. And, you know, if you're watching, your first thought might have been like, how is this dude going to get any money to get armor in like a day? And what he does is he sells one of his horses, Sweetfoot, who's the mayor of the three horses. I don't remember if Sweetfoot, you know, they all serve different purposes. Like, one is kind of their pack horse. I think maybe that's Chestnut. So Sweetfoot was kind of their extra horse almost. And, you know, he sells her. And I feel like they made this, you know, line for line, it's like exactly what's in the book. But I feel like they made it almost more emotional because we see Dunk caring about horses so much. He talks to the horses in this more. You know, he's taking care of Arian's horse because Arian, you know, left it here with people and it's starting to hurt them because it's scared. So when Dunk says goodbye to Sweetfoot, like I was moved. I was like, oh, this is really sad. This is sad that we're doing this. What'd you think of that scene?
I'm like, when Sweetfoot gonna come back? Like, what?
Yeah.
So what are we gonna do about our boy or girl? I can't remember what gender Sweetfoot is. I'm like, oh, please come back. I think it was a good scene of showing, because we see in the first episode where Dunk is, you know, debating between him and the horses. Like, should I just sell all you guys, take the money, go join a city watch somewhere and have enough money to start a life? Or should I risk it all, come to this tourney and, you know, essentially gamble almost everything I have? And we see what Dunk did. He chose to keep his horses and gamble, but they were always that that extra coin in his pocket. Like, if push came to shove, if I really needed to, I can at least afford to sell one to get a little head start. And this is the first step on selling a horse to get a head start somewhere.
Yeah, totally. And I like that, you know, he says to the horse, like, if I win, if I become a champion, I can come back and buy you back again. Mm. You know, he's just got so much hope. I feel like this episode really, you know, it's called hard salt beef this episode because of the food they're eating. But I feel like it's also like a tough lesson or a sobering lesson for Dunk to swallow as well. Like, because right after that scene, he goes and he talks with Ag, and that's where we get the kind of the conversation about the Craig Halls being crabbers who own a huge fleet and whatever else. And then the joust begins and it's at night and it's this big, epic, cool scene. And Dunk, you know, Ag is into it. Dunk kind of starts getting anxious because it really sinks in. He's going to have to do this. And can he do this? Like, we see people like being acrobatic and like leaning down and grabbing a shield off the ground and stuff while they're still on horseback. Like, this dude is out of his depth, but he, you know, and yeah, it's starting to hit home for him. And I feel like the title's almost a double play on that. Let's talk about the joust now.
Yeah, I want to say this is probably the best joust in that little quick scene that we've seen in all the Game of Thrones shows. Well, now that I think about it, at least to me so far. We got to see seven knights clashing with each other. Like you said, the acrobatics. We had knights leaning over, grabbing shields. I can't remember which one it was. Another knight knocked him off his horse. Like, their horse ran into him. He jumps on the ground, jumps on another horse, and picks up the shield. I'm like, I don't even know if that's legal. That goes against the rules.
Right?
I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let it slide.
Yeah. It's so impressive. You got to just go with it.
100%. Seeing even House Tully on the scene.
Yeah.
Our man made his entrance by it. It seemed weird. Why would you bite? He bit a fish head and threw it in the air, but the fish is the symbol, the trout is the symbol of House Tully. So, like, why are you eating its head raw? Yeah. I'm like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I had that thought too. It's like, are you being disrespectful to your own house? You're just doing this for the stunt of it all. I loved seeing the different houses in there. You know, a lot of recognizable ones. We had House Tully. I saw House Hightower in there. Yes. Obviously, Lionel Baratheon was in there. We had probably the most important one was Valar Targaryen, Baelor's son, was in there jousting, and Dunk thinks he's the favorite to win the tournament. You know, the prince of the heir to the Iron Throne. You know, if anyone's going to win it, it's going to be that guy. And he's really skilled in whatever. I think I agree with you. I don't think, you know, that was kind of one of the mandates of this show, because we've had tourneys before in Game of Thrones, but like George R. R. Martin really describes them in such detail. Like, you can tell he loves the idea of these tournaments with all their pageantry and people jousting and melees, and like far more often in the books A Song of Ice and Fire than seeing good tourneys, you'll get people like reminiscing about all these great tourneys they went to and how raucous they were and like who did what in the melee and in the joust. And this is the first time we've really seen it where it's not getting interrupted by, you know, Gregor Clegane killing a horse, or, you know, like Daemon Targaryen getting into it with Sir Criston Cole. Like, this is just a tourney scene, just a joust. And yeah, they really went hard on like the different camera angles and all this stuff, the stunts, like chef's kiss.
I feel like in The Hedge Knight, if there were two things you had to get right, it was answering the question of what is knighthood and having a cool attorney.
Yeah.
And so totally. Far, I think they're doing a great job of deconstructing what does it mean to really be a knight. And they're doing a great job on showing us this is a tourney. And I can't remember in the book if it happened at night or in the evening, but I'm like, oh, this is like all lit by torchlight. It's starting to get dark. I feel like we're at a football game or something.
Yeah, totally. I don't remember if it happened at night too, but I know that at like New York Comic Con, Ira Parker, the showrunner, talked about how they, you know, they did that night joust and how they thought that was a thing no film productions had ever done before that they wanted to try to do. They're trying to do some firsts here, and doing a good nighttime joust was one of them. And like you said, lit with torchlight, all this stuff. They're doing so much practical stuff in this show. Like, obviously there's some CG in the joust, but it's the sort of CG where like you don't notice it. You know what I mean? It's not like a dragon where it's like, obviously that's CG. It's a giant dragon. Like, what else could it be? It's like, you know, the splinters on a lance breaking, or, you know, a quick shot of a horse as someone's falling off of it, where some parts of it are CG. I feel like they really committed to making this feel real. Like you could be standing right there in Ashford Meadow and it could feel like a real place. And it just makes this joust that much better. Just, what a good time.
I agree with you 100%. And like, kind of like you were mentioning earlier about just Dunk being there watching this epic joust happen and realizing like, oh my goodness, I need to do this. And then we see him having that conversation with Egg of talking about like, you know what? Now that I think about it, was Sir Arlen really that great of a knight?
Yeah.
And if he wasn't great of a knight in arms or in jousting, and he trained me.
What does that make me? Yeah, that's, you know, that's again with like the difficult stuff for Dunk to swallow. I feel like he came back around to this in the end. Like, you know, Sir Arlen lived this long life. He got into his almost 60s, I think, is Dunk's estimate. You know, that's a long time to live in Westeros, especially when you're like traveling the road for most of your life. You know, it's not like he lived a life of comfort. He did not. But, you know, he lived that long life. He was never a champion. He never really distinguished himself at tournaments. He just went around doing little deeds of good wherever he did. And Dunk is, I love the line of like, I am his legacy. You know, Dunk is Sir Arlen's legacy. And now it's his chance to show these great knights what that means, you know, what he wrought and stuff. Like, I love that. But also I'm nervous for him.
It's like, I'm happy to be the legacy, and everything he taught me is awesome. But is that enough for me to win this tourney? And this is the first time he's, you know, kind of doubted himself. Like the whole episode, he's like, yeah. The whole episode is a perfect encapsulation of the rising action. Everything's a high. He goes from meeting the prince of the realm, the second in, mm-hmm. the hand of the king, him saying, "I remember your master. You're up, yeah. My guy. You're in the tourney." To go to play, have a good time with Sir Lionel Baratheon, talk to the girl he likes, her wanting to paying her to paint his shield, talking to the armor, getting armor, everything's up and up. Then he sees the joust and he's like, "Oh, I really have to."
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and again, I really like that. Like, it feels like this show is just confident in the story it's telling, because like we did get more action this time than the last episode. Like, we get the joust, it is exciting, but like the main tension is still like Dunk realizing, oh my god, I have to do the thing, and that's a little terrifying because look at how experienced all these people are. And I feel like this is almost the feel good episode in a lot of ways, you know, like you said, like things seem to be going right for Dunk, even though people are crapping on him left and right. Like, it's like things are going right, but everyone's telling him he's big and dumb, or like, man, knighthood has fallen on hard times. There are all these points where people are kind of mean to him, but also lots of things are going right. And then, yeah, but at the end of the day, like, will that make the difference? Like, can he joust with these great lords and not make a total fool of himself? I guess we'll find out.
More to come.
Yeah, more to come. One thing I did want to ask you. So this episode, I believe, is around 33 minutes. The premiere was 40, so it was the longest episode of the season. How are you feeling about the shorter run times this week?
I always say, especially for a comedy, you don't want your episodes to be too long. And I know this is more of a dramedy with comedy elements in it.
Yeah.
But I know we said this before, but for the story they're telling, for how much material they had to even expand upon, like they've expanded on those little bits in the scenes, from going from to him talking in his head to him saying it out, verbalizing it out loud, to cutting to different characters to see their reaction.
Yeah,
I feel like we have enough of a runtime. I know some of the comments I've read, you know, across TikTok, some of them were angry or upset with like, oh, it needs to be longer. It needs to be longer. But like, we're getting enough to tell the story.
Yeah, totally. I've seen those too, and I've gotten in a couple of arguments about this online, or I've resisted getting sucked in too deeply, of like, should this show be longer, right? It's six episodes or half hour episodes. You know, the example that I've seen people give is Murderbot was similarly, it was a novella, the Apple TV show. They blew it up into 10 episodes, 10 half hour episodes. And that worked for Murderbot really well. But like, that was an ensemble cast show. They added a ton of like new story elements and stuff. And like, I feel like A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, like, it's adding things, but it's not interested in like really totally branching out too far away from the novella. Like, I like the six episode count. Like, I, you know, we'll have a better idea of it after the whole season airs and everyone's seen it. And then the people who've been saying it's so short can either say I'm vindicated or maybe I was wrong. But I really like it. So are you feeling good about the shorter amount of episodes too?
I mean, I always want more.
Yeah, totally. Like,
if we can find an extra episode, I'll be here to watch it. I'm not going to complain. But for the story they're telling, I think that's enough. Of course, if they did want to tell another story, I know George has played around with there potentially being a story between novella one and novella two that he may be interested in doing one day. If they did want to maybe expand on that to make season two even longer, great.
Yeah.
But if not, I think for this story, six episodes is enough. I think that might even be too long for the second novella, six. So
you think that's too, I was wondering if they would do an extra episode or not for the Sworn Sword, which is the second one, which is, you know, it doesn't take place at Eterni. It's a little bit twistier of a political sort of story. It's about these two houses arguing over a bit of land, essentially. Yes. And Dunk, it has agreed to serve one of them, but he finds out the story is kind of complicated and he's stuck in the middle of it. So you think that one could get away with less than six?
I think they could, and I hope they don't.
Yeah.
Totally. Like if they told me they got five episodes, I'd be like, I believe them.
Yeah, right.
I feel like that one's just so much smaller than the Hedge Knight. Not in terms of length, but just for how much there is. Cause a lot of it is just people having conversations in rooms.
Yeah, you're totally right. It, you know, the Hedge Knight has more obvious, discernible beats that you can look at and say, yep, that can pin down an episode, or like this can be the big scene in an episode. Like the whole Baelor Targaryen scene in this one, it's like that's going to be essentially the heart of the episode. It happens right around the middle. It's kind of the thing the episode turns around, and then we get the come down off of that and seeing the joust. And like, they can add a few minutes of jousting. Sure. You're right. The Sworn Sword, it'd be a little harder to do that, you know?
That was really going to be taken into the small folk. They'll definitely have a way bigger role in the Sworn Sword.
Yeah, totally. This reminds me of something that I read this week that I want to ask your opinion about. So we do know that obviously George R. R. Martin has other Dunkin' and Egg novellas planned. I have kind of been of the opinion that, like, you know, we're all still waiting on The Winds of Winter, whatever. Like, I don't know how many of them he'll actually write, but I feel like the show could be a really good place to still do the material from those novellas. And like, Ira Parker has said he's seen outlines for like 12, 13, 14, 15 of these Dunkin' Egg books. Would you want to see the TV show go past the three novellas that George has already written?
You know what? I guess that it would just depend on how in-depth his notes are for anybody who, if they did want to go beyond just three seasons. If he has like very detailed notes, maybe he has a little bit of dialogue. I know he said he had a lot written maybe for the two other novellas. So if he has that and they can make those seasons, I'll be comfortable with maybe two more, not 12. That'd be, I don't think they wouldn't get that anyway, but if they said, oh, we got, or if George, maybe he's close to finishing two or three more novellas, I'll be happy with that too, George, if you're listening.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. He did say in that big crazy interview that he has been working on the Dunkin' Egg book. So it's a little bit more than just a, yes, I'd like to write these. Like, he has been toying with them. He has been adding new words to them. And yeah, you're right. There are two that he referenced that he has been writing. One is one we've known about for years, that the working title was The She-Wolves of Winterfell, where Dunk goes to Winterfell. The theories are he maybe has a romance with old Nan when she's young Nan, you know, because there are fan theories that Hodor is related to Dunk.
Gotta get the hype from somewhere. So
yeah, I gotta get the hype from somewhere. The other one takes place in the Riverlands. We don't really know too many deets for that. But yeah, I agree with you, especially She-Wolves of Winterfell. Like, he's gotta have a pretty good idea of what that story is. Like, he's been talking about it for many years. I wouldn't be surprised to see the show do that, especially if it does well, because, like, you know, they're into a yearly release model with this, which I love. Like, we won't need to wait 2 years to see more Dunk and Egg. Like, they're coming back in 2027 for season two.
Yes. Yes. I think as long as we keep showing up and we keep proving we want yearly releases, they'll be like, okay, this isn't a crazy cost of a show. Maybe we can give that to you.
Yeah. So Ira Parker, his crazy idea for this that I feel like we maybe didn't know that this was a thing. He said that he's seen all these outlines, and the outlines essentially span Dunk and Egg's entire lives. I didn't know if, you know, the Tales of Dunk and Egg books were going to be like mainly young Egg with Dunk traveling around, but it sounds like Martin wants it to run the whole, you know, the whole breadth of their lives. And obviously we can talk more about this next week, what that means, you know, you know, Egg's going to have an interesting life, and so will Dunk. And if you know the lore, you know what that means. But like, Ira Parker said, he has joked with HBO, like, let's do like 5 seasons and then we'll come back in 10 years and we'll do, you know, Egg as a young adult for a few seasons, and then we'll come back in a few years and do Egg as a man for a few seasons. And it's like, you know, that would be, I don't know how I feel about that. Excited, nervous, weird.
I feel like I'll be a little nervous about it. Like, I know with Peter Claffer, he's like, so I gotta stay in fighting shape for how long now?
Yep, the rest of your life, Peter. Have fun. I'm sorry.
Oh god.
But yeah, so we'll see how that goes. For now, we've just got season one. We've got the second episode. So 1 to 10. How you feel? What do you rate this episode?
1 to 10 for the rising action of, you know what, I'll go, and not being a fanboy, I'll say 8.5.
That feels like a pretty fair one. It's a good episode. It's not a mind-blowing episode.
No.
You're not going to go home shell-shocked thinking about it for weeks, but it's a good, solid episode that sets us up for, you know, even crazier things to come. I feel like 8.5 is good. I was going to say 8, so we're on the same level here.
8.25, that's not bad.
Yeah. So, obviously, we've run long. It's 51 minutes. We've been having this conversation. We have officially talked more than time and a half of the episode itself. But before we wrap up, Mark, is there any other stuff you've been watching, reading? What have we been watching and reading aside from A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms? Let's just touch on it briefly here at the end.
Okay, I've been, and I need to catch up. I've been watching Robin Hood on MGM Plus.
Oh, have you? Is it good?
It's good. It's good. Have Sean Bean. We love our Ned Stark. I'm on episode 4 now. I think it's 10 episodes. But it's a good show, telling Robin Hood from all the way from the beginning. I'm like, oh, I didn't know we started from way back here. And but it's interesting, and you still get all that political drama. So if you like the political drama back in the day, we're in England, we gotta take from the rich to give to the poor. We're just on the precipice of taking from the rich and giving to the poor right now. So
yeah,
I say check it out. And I'm almost finished reading The Strength of the Few now.
Nice.
So I'm looking for other books. I got a lot of books on my TBR, and I gotta make a decision.
Yeah, totally. I'm excited to hear when you finish that one. That's a series I've been thinking about getting into, the hierarchy books. But the TBR is merciless and never ending, and it's like, I need to carve out time, but I don't know when. Nice. Yeah. So So I have been Fallout is the big one that I've been watching aside from A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. Its sixth episode of its second season just aired, and it introduced a super mutant. So we're getting some cool stuff from the games that we hadn't seen before, played by none other than Ron Perlman, which was pretty cool. And yeah, it was a good episode. It felt a little like setup for the final two. So I've been enjoying this season, but I'm really curious to see how it wraps up. Partially because, you know, they've set it up well, and partially because I saw the first six all early. So like, I've been waiting for episode seven for like a month and a half at this point.
You're like, come on, guys.
Yeah. So I've been watching that. That's on Prime Video. It's really good if you like irreverent sci-fi. The other thing I have been reading is To Shape a Dragon's Breath by Monocle Black Goose, which is kind of like it's a dragon rider fantasy, but it's got Native American world building, where essentially this young indigenous woman finds a dragon egg and then has to go to the school for training dragons of the people who have colonized their region. And what does that look like? That clashing of like views of how we do dragon riding. It's good so far. I'm enjoying it, not quite as much as I hoped I would, because it's like a super hyped book. Like the author like won the Astounding Award at the Hugos last year and stuff, but it's a magic school book, and like I don't know how you feel. Like, I don't know if it's just because I'm getting older, but like magic school, it's hard to sell me on like sit in class and we're going to explain the magic system. Like, that starts to lose me just a little bit. So I'm going to read some more of it to see if we can get through some of that stuff. But it has been really cool, though.
Yeah, I think that's always the question. Like, how long are we going to be in school? Like, because like you said, in the Hierarchy series, the first book, half of it, you are in a school.
Yeah, yeah.
I will say, next book, less school. Less school.
That's nice. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like, unless it's like, you know, I think Leigh Bardugo has a series where it's like, this is magical academia. And it's like, okay, you put it out there right at the start. That's what the whole series is, fine. But if it's something like this bugged me with The Name of the Winds, where like, you know, Kvothe has this big legend about himself and he did all these things. And then like by late in the second book, he still hasn't been fully expelled. He's still in school. And it's like, I thought you had all this other stuff you did and you're still in school. So yeah, I have a little bit harder of a time with that than I used to, but that aside, the book is really good.
Okay. I'm back in. Cool.
But yeah, so, this has been our show. Mark, do you have any closing thoughts you want to touch on here about A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms episode two?
A great job of trying to answer the question of what makes a knight. Is it the shield? Is it the sword? Is it the vows? Is it just the man's honor? We're still exploring that, and I'm still happy to be on this journey with the Take the Bat Black podcast.
Yeah, yeah, it's been awesome so far. I can't wait to dig into the rest of the season with you. And yeah, it was a good solid episode, and there are more to come, four more. And we are going to be breaking them down each week right after the episode airs on this podcast, Take the Black. Find us on YouTube, on Facebook, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We're probably there. So like, subscribe, rate us, leave comments. Don't be too mean, unless you really feel impassioned and you want to get your inner Arion Targaryen out. I'm sorry. Who hurt you? But aside from that, you know, come hang with us, because we do this every week. And our next one will be out a week from today, where we'll be talking about the third episode, which is the halfway point of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. So tune in then, watch the show, check out all the coverage we're doing for it on winterscoming.net. Find Mark on TikTok and YouTube at House of Nettles. And yeah, until next time, we are Take the Black, and we'll see you then. See you next week for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, episode 3.